It's really going on in Santa Cruz around the criminalization of the poor. 1 o'clock at the town clock, Monday the 22nd. Tomorrow, hot drinks will be provided. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, I have an announcement I would like to piggyback to the one you just made about 1 o'clock at the town clock.
Uh-huh.
I would like to invite people in this town who are in a position to afford it or want to do something to help people to bring blankets and sleeping bags and good, clean, warm underwear. Socks, gloves are cool too, but blankies and sleeping bags especially. And a team that's being led by Chris Fredrickson will be sure that these things get to the people who are camped out and excluded from any kind of shelter system by choice or not when it's too cold or wet. And we have a number of people in the community helping, but we can use more blankets.
This will be tomorrow at 1 o'clock at the town clock. Bring your blankets, sleeping bags, socks and such.
Yeah, clean socks, clean gloves, but sleeping bags and blankets especially, sheets if you got them and you don't need them. And if people can bring them there to the town clock, then we don't have to use as much gas trying to collect them to get them for the people who need them. So it's an easy way to help if you've been wondering how to contribute and make it a little safer outside. And if you need more information about it, you can call me at 423-4663. And if you're a needy person that's had your bedding stolen or soaked or it's just not adequate or you've worn it out or you're just not ready for the next freeze snap, you can call Chris Fredrickson at 457-9754, extension 274. That's extension 274.
Okay, 457-9754, extension 274, to look for the some life-saving bedding, you can give a call to you, Linda, to get more information about this.
Yeah, to volunteer to help, or if you just want to know what we're doing and how many people we've helped so far and what we're up against, call me or maybe even your number if people are more comfortable with the Huff line, but I will get back to anyone who calls.
423-HUFF or 423-HOME, that's your number, H-O-M-E.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I hope a lot of people turn out at 1 tomorrow. Oh, yeah, and I wanted to remind people that prior to what you might hear in the press, this reading of the name started years before there was a homeless service center, homeless ghetto here. It started when Henry Cisneros found a dead woman named Mary on the bus stop outside of his office on the way to work. And so he began to realize, something's not working here. And it spread across the country. And the first of these name readings were at the town clock. That's enough. I know you're out of time.
No, it's okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
You know what year that was?
No, I'm going to try to find out. Maybe some web surf savvy person could help. But it was later than 1981, and I think it was around the time of the earthquake. But I can't remember. I'm going to try to find out.
Alrighty.
Thank you.
Thanks, Linda.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. Got about 5 minutes left in the show, so come on down or call on in. And if you want to get some words in, now's the time to do it. Looks like we're about reaching the end of our story here. Here's some caroling from a rowdy group of carolers in front of the Gap. I started to play them last time and then cut them off, but they deserve a little more time, so who knows? Maybe we can mount an effort like these folks did. Here's some caroling, the kind that we're going to be doing tomorrow. Ours may be a little more pointed, but you'll catch the drift.
I still get hoppy. Wouldn't that VCR fit in just right? Here by a Walkman bound to their snow light. Go on a spree, you'll find daring and reckless. Maybe a shirt, some new shoes, or a necklace. Stay away from friendships, they're liable to flop. Put on your coat and get out there and shop. Homeless people, unemployment, tend to make me sad. But then I go shopping and buy myself things, and then I don't feel so bad. Friendship, take time you need patience, a large heart. Shopping's a snap, you can carry a charge card. Putting out some linen, some napkins with rings. Go home and cuddle with some of your things. Watching the news makes me restless, it's boring. I'd rather get more books and leave in story. As for relationships, I had my fill. Let me go shopping, it won't make me ill. Losing lovers, losing friendships, tend to make me pine. So what if my shopping will leave me in debt? Surround me with things, I'm fine.
The Notorious Art and Revolution doing a anti-Gapsky song-a-rama here.
I'm trying to sing better with this.
Okay.
Oh, our power.
Okay.
And they're tuning up, folks.
I know the tune, so you got to
have it. Ready?
It's on the street tuning.
Everything called life, celebrate each day's rebirth. So power, inexpensive energy. So send your rushing waters near, let the joyful hills resound. So sun in jubilee, sing with us this joyous strain. So consumer wonderland. In the stores you will hear it. Pricey gift, show holiday spirit. That's what they call it. To get you all it. Welcome to consumer wonderland. At the mall we can go out shopping and buy lots of stuff we can't afford. We'll have lots of fun with our new toys until we realize that we're still bored. When you shop, ain't it thrilling? Until you get the feeling, the money is slow, the stuff broke long ago. Welcome to a consumer wonderland.
Let's make the half circle so we can hear each other.
That was Consumer Wonderland, for all you who are wondering. This is a group of eight singers.
Red deer on a credit card, it shows. Christmas is almost over, but the debit line still grows. Shopping like Santa zombies, set our budget down in flames. spirit. Help the giant retail chain. I'm so foggy on Christmas Eve, wondering how we'll pay. Christmas doesn't seem so right when our finances are tight. So here's a plan for next year. Let's forget the shopping spree. Let's all give the mistletoe. All our Christmas gifts are free.
And that's the kind of caroling. Hopefully we can meet the standards of Art and Revolution. That was sort of a more organized group. It's done it before and may not be Bing Crosby, but still, it's real, it's live, it's talking about important stuff. It's out there on the streets that we go up and down every day, and they're singing about things that are important. Well, I'm awaiting the arrival of old lady Scararms here, ready to hit the road at any moment, because she's going to be setting up this interview, which has to happen at 1 today. I think what I'm going to do is play for you until she arrives a little bit of an interview I had with a man in jail. He is an African-American who is jailed on a charge of statutory rape. And he has some rather grim things to say about the jail. He tried to withdraw his plea, but apparently he feels he will not get a fair trial in this county, so he's not going to be able to do that. I'm going to play a little bit of a conversation with him, and maybe we'll pick it up at a later time. Ricky Murphy, this is December 4th, 2003, about 10:15 in the morning. Ricky's in solitary in Santa Cruz County Jail. Hi, Ricky.
How are you, Robert?
Yeah, I'm changing the tape over here. Talk as loudly as you can. We got a difficult recording situation.
Okay.
So you say that the guards are put on the shackles so tightly that it constitutes a form of abuse?
Yeah, it does. It's a form of abuse, what they can get away with, and anything that they could possibly get away with where it really can't be protected right then and later on, it's all good because it's always your word against their word. We were given pink slips, which are grievance slips, to pass amongst the staff and the inmates so that when they have a problem with the staff or with the inmates, that they can pass this on, right?
Hang on just a second. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I'm writing to the perpetrators of the crime. And whenever you write to the perpetrators of the crime, I mean, of course, their supervisors are going to write back and say, oh, there's not a problem here. You're the problem.
Mm-hmm.
What are you talking about?
How many complaints have you filed?
I filed about 20. And they explained to me if I file another complaint, what they were going to basically do to me.
What did they say?
They're going to take away various privileges, like visiting privileges. I haven't had a visitor since I've been here.
Uh-huh. What other privileges are they threatening to take away?
Commissary is their number one item of choice.
Commissary.
There are many. I don't have the list with me, but there are many things that they can do. Like, for instance, when it comes time for me to use the telephones and I'm out for 1 hour, they turn the telephones off. That kind of stuff. Make it very impossible to call anyone on the outside. When it comes time to mail your information out, it could take months, if not weeks, for the information to make it out. Even though it's mail tampering, they're not charged with any of this or with any of these crimes.
So the specific kinds of punishments they threaten, though, are not cutting off your phone or mail tampering, but mainly commissary and what else?
Oh, they cut off the phones, and they do cut off. They cut off a lot of different various activities possibly have, which you may not. You may take for granted at first, but later on, you really
right.
cut them.
Do they explicitly state that's what they're going to do?
No, they don't. But they try to trap you into a behavioral situation, and they make it not look good for you. It's their call.
So now you've been in jail. Forgive me for repeating this. For how long now?
I've been since July, and I was out for 30 days.
And how long were you? So you've been in there since. When did you return to jail?
I returned October 9th.
So you've been in continuously since October 9th on these two charges of statutory rape and marijuana, which you're now attempting to have. Well, you never really had a trial. You did a plea bargain that you feel was, you know, you did under threat of, because you were in jail and you felt your life was being threatened. And it was, do you have, this was in, this was in the general population in July?
Yeah, well, actually, no, I didn't, I never made it to general population. Crime won't allow me to be in general population, it allowed me to be in a protective custody. So when I was in protective custody, there were so many people in protective custody. There were like I think about 80 people that weren't supposed to be in. So every 2 feet, were coming in contact with one another, and they were having problems, very serious behavioral problems. But they were trying to modify themselves because they knew that once they left there, they would be in isolation.
And you were arrested when?
I was arrested 7/28/03.
That was July of 2003?
Correct.
And then you were held for how long in jail until you were released the first time?
I was in jail for about a month.
And it was that month's
incarceration? After that, I came up for OR, but the only way that they would lower the bail, the bail kept getting higher and higher because they kept adding charges.
How many charges were you eventually charged with?
They charged me with about 12 charges, and then it added up to about 27 years.
And this is all for a contact you had with one adolescent woman, one girl?
Well, supposedly, a supposed contact. A
supposed contact. And, okay, well, I'm not going to ask you for the details of this because you haven't gone to trial yet on this.
Basically, it was like this. Someone was given immunity to accuse me.
Uh-huh.
And that's what that person was given. And from there, I lost my business, my family, my relatives, and my business partners, as well as my business, which police had that sign a statement, which was a search warrant for them to search them. The next thing that they did was to violate me. If they violated me, that they went and broke into my building, search warrant, and from that point, people just started violating my business.
Your stuff was taken away and stolen, and so you felt that was one of the reasons you had to plea bargain to get out of jail, or was it?
Yes, sir.
And you were also,
my life was being threatened.
Your life was being threatened in jail as well?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And you're talking about even though you were being held in protective custody. Hello? Hello?
Yes, I'm still here.
Even though you were being held in protective custody, which was very, apparently there were too many people there, and you were being threatened? And
like I said, I was put in contact with gang members on the way to court. And it becomes more and more life-threatening every day, some of the things that could possibly happen.
Well, did this change once you pled guilty? I mean, did your situation improve?
Okay. Well, I don't think my situation is going to improve anytime soon, unless at least, because I'm still in protective, I mean, I'm still an inmate here.
Right. What I'm saying is, was it sort of a futile move to plead guilty because you didn't improve your situation, even though you said one of the reasons you wanted to improve your, one of the reasons you agreed to plead guilty was to get out of, to avoid the threats on your life in so-called protective custody?
Yes, sir.
But that didn't have that effect?
No, sir. I didn't have an attorney that was representing me correctly, so when I didn't get proper representation from my attorney, I tried to get another attorney when I was out on bail. I tried to sell what was left of my studio.
So, in other words, they didn't allow you out on bail until you pled guilty?
Correct.
So, now you're going back to court to challenge that plea because you feel the plea was under duress?
Correct.
Your first attorney, Ken Acevedo, is not helpful in this regard?
No, he wasn't and still is not.
Your second attorney, Sean Gallagher, has slipped up a bit, but you have some you have more confidence in him?
I have a lot more confidence in Sean right now than I did in Acevedo. At least he's with honestly as possible. And that's what I like, is that we have a dialogue, not a monologue.
Has Gallagher visited you in jail?
Yes, he has more times than Acevedo ever did.
Did you request Acevedo to visit you, but he did not?
I requested it on occasion. Never heard me on that basis.
I see.
So I'm really glad to have another attorney and glad to have someone.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I'm glad to have another attorney and I'm glad to have someone who's a fighter, not a quitter.
Do you want people to write to you in jail?
They can. I'd like for people.
In order for people to write to you in jail, I believe they have to come in and put their name on your, they have to bring a driver's license and ID to jail, say who they are, get on your writing list or some such thing, is that right?
I'm not sure. I think that what they should do is call the sheriff's department at the jail and find out what their procedures are, because I've never wrote a letter to an inmate here. But I'm curious of how it works.
Well, maybe what you should do now is, again, say and spell your name loudly and clearly so the audience can hear it in case they want to write to you.
My name is Ricky, R-I-C-K-E-Y, E-E-R-N-A-R-D, Bernard Murphy, M-U-R-D-H-Y.
And your date of birth?
08-09-1957.
Okay, and I guess the address of the Santa Cruz County Jail, maybe I can give it another point.
Well, the address of the Santa Cruz County Jail is 259 Water, W-A-T-E-R, Street, Santa Cruz, 95060.
Okay, and your next court date is December 15th in Art Danner's court at 8:15, where he will decide whether he can hear your case for a rehearing of the, and maybe you'll have it right to trial.
True, and that would be Department 3.
Okay, Department 3. You also mentioned in the past that you think that this recent brouhaha about a statutory rape, and you're not charged with any kind of forcible rape.
No. But see, and you got to look at the thing also is that I'm disabled, and my disability is emotional disability.
And what sort?
Emotional disability was all that I've been diagnosed as.
What does it mean?
It means that people like myself suffer from being able to gather certain emotional things.
No, I mean what?
Bipolar, but what I think is that. We could get very emotional.
And that's it for Bathurst Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned now for a special interview with Old Lady Scar Arms. She'll be coming on shortly. I'll be coming back on Thursday. And you can catch me at 6 o'clock on Thursday evening here on Free Radio at 96.3 FM. Or check me out at the town clock tomorrow, 1 o'clock. We'll do some caroling together.
Why do your warships sail on my waters? Why do your death bombs fall from my sky? Why do you burn my farm and my town down? I've got an old friend, I've got to know why. What makes your ships haul death to my people? Natural blockbusters, big cannons and guns. Why can't your ship bring food and some clothing? I've got to know, yes, I've got to know why. I've got to know, yes, I've got to know, friend. Hungry lips ask me wherever I go. Comrades and friends all falling around me. I've got to know, yes, I've got to know. What good work did you do? I'd like to ask you to give you my money right out of my hand. I built your big house to hide from my people. Why do you hide so? I've got to know. Why can't we spend more to build homeless shelters? Why are the homeless here anyhow? Fortunes are building on greed and on killing. I've got to know, yes, I've got to know now.
You're tuned to 96.3 Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're tuned to 96.3 Free Radio Santa Cruz or 101.1 FM. And I'm joined this afternoon on the phone by Oren Iftakel. He teaches political geography, urban planning, and public policy at Ben-Gurion University of the Negev, Be'er Sheva, Israel. He is currently based in Washington, D.C. at the Institute of Peace, at the U.S. Institute of Peace. Iftakel is a contributing editor to Middle East Report and editor of Hagar, International Social Science Review. Commenting on Sharon's Herzliya speech, Iftakel said the other day, quote, in his recent public statements, Sharon has uttered a series of rhetorical statements that do not correspond to his actions on the ground, but the rhetoric is not meaningless if it leads to a political breakthrough or to the removal of the first settlement, a precedent that is urgently needed, unquote. And I'd like to welcome Oren to the program today. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Let's talk a little bit about your background before we talk about Sharon's speech. Can you tell us just a little bit more about your background?
Well, I've studied in Israel and in Australia, out of all places, and finished my doctorate at Haifa Technion. That was about 15 years ago, and I've studied in more or less most of my research projects were to do with land issues, ethnic relations, development, regional development, and much to do with Israel-Palestine, but I've also studied the case of the Aborigines in Australia and other minorities in Southern Asia, like the Tamils, Punjab, Estonia, Serbia. So I've applied a comparative perspective, but focusing naturally on Israel-Palestine. And I have a book coming up this year about Israel-Palestine with the University of Pennsylvania Press.
Were you born in Israel?
Yeah. I'm bred and born in Israel, in the Galilee, which is a mixed Palestinian-Jewish region, which I think in reflection brought me to be very serious about this issue of coexistence of the two nations on this one homeland.
Can you tell us a little bit more about Sharon's Herzliya speech, when it took place, and what the gist of it was?
Well, throughout the last week took place an event, an annual event, that is run by one of Israel's major strategic think tanks, and also it's part of Israel's largest and most prestigious private university in Herzliya, about national security. They run it, I think, for the third or fourth time running, and they've managed to make it an event that counts, with media and most of the leaders and analysts and strategists come to express their views. Of course, with a very strong Zionist, mainstream Zionist agenda and discourse. But nonetheless, there is a range of opinion there, and usually the Prime Minister's speech there receives much attention. Last year, if I'm not mistaken, was one of the first times that he actually announced that there will be a Palestinian state. This year he went a couple of steps further rhetorically, and as you indicated in your opener, I see a big difference between his talk and his action. So far, there's actually all action on the ground goes the other way. There is more settlements are built, they expand the settlements, more roads are built. Of course, the wall, the fence wall, is under construction as well. But yet the talk is not insignificant, as I said. And bit by bit, he bites into the rightist consensus in Israel that there will be no Palestinian state. And let me remind you that only last year, the Likud General Assembly, which is a very powerful political body, voted that there shall never be another state between the Jordan and the sea. So it's still official Likud policy that there will be no Palestinian state, and yet Sharon is giving him more and more weight in his speeches. Very little, of course, too little and very late, but nonetheless it's not insignificant in breaking and changing the Israeli discourse.
Now, basically what Sharon was was stating was that he plans to unilaterally separate from Palestinians. Can you explain?
Well, the whole notion among the left, the Zionist left until now, was that there must be a way to reach an agreement with the Palestinians, a peace agreement, lasting peace, sustainable peace of coexistence and solidarity even. Among the right, which Sharon represents, and in previous he represented even the extreme right, there's always been the notion that it's impossible to achieve peace. That is, the Palestinians are so intransigent and their goals are so far-reaching that Israel just has to stand firm and therefore just maximize its security. Now, Sharon is, in the last year, as I said, in her Herzliya speech, is somehow retreating from this agenda, bit by bit, step by step, and still using very much the rightist position that there is no partner. And there is no possibility of reaching peace, but nonetheless it's now better for Israel strategically to withdraw from some densely populated area, call that a Palestinian or provisional Palestinian state according to President Bush's roadmap, and he can live with that, and of course it's no peace, but he thinks Israel will be better off that way.
So basically what Sharon is suggesting, according to Gush Shalom, an Israeli peace group, is he is suggesting taking about half of the West Bank into Israel, pulling out of a few not very important strategically outposts or some settlements that are not really of that much importance to Israel, and then saying, you know, basically annexing land and saying the Palestinians can remain in these enclaves that are not connected, and actually, according to Shalom, suggested